14 minutes now after 8 o'clock, and coming up next, the history of abandoned Manitoba.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.
Today we continue our new series on the Weekend Morning Show. It's a look at Manitoba's history, but from an unusual perspective. This series is about abandoned Manitoba. Our guide is Gordon Goldsborough, chair of the Historic Preservation Committee of the Manitoba Historical Society. Gordon takes us to unique but now abandoned buildings and sites all over the province, and today's is right in the heart of the city. Gordon's here now. Hello there.
Good morning, Terry.
So what place are you going to talk about today?
Well, it's a place that I suspect in the minds of many Winnipeggers they have very distinct memories of.
Distinct,
yes.
Can I play on words there? Because?
Well, I was a kid of the West End, and I remember distinctly every time I'd go visiting the east side of the city, there was this pungent aroma, and it was just pervasive. You just couldn't imagine ever living there, and yet I guess people lived there for generations and never really noticed it very
okay.
much.
Now, what was the site called?
Well, it went by various names. The official name was the Union Stockyards, but it was also known variously as the St. Boniface Stockyards or sometimes the Winnipeg Stockyards.
And for those who haven't been there or didn't follow their noses back in the old days, where exactly was it located?
It was on the south side of Marion, east of Lajumodier.
And what were the origins of the Union Stockyards? We'll call it the Union Stockyards
sure.
for the sake of this conversation.
Well, it goes back to just after the turn of the 20th century. The provincial government wanted to establish a meat processing facility here. So they sent out a sort of a delegation to look at other facilities around North America and came back with some very definite ideas so that when construction began in 1912, they had this vision of what was going to be ultimately be, well, I've heard it described as the largest such facility in the British Empire.
Goodness. Okay. And why did they build in St. Boniface?
Well, I'm not sure why specifically there. I suppose at the time it was probably sort of near the edge of the city, but simply because Winnipeg was the center of most things going on in the prairies at that time. I mean, it was really the only major metropolitan area. Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, they just weren't big places yet. So it was logical that Winnipeg, which was the main center, that was where the meat processing would be focused.
So the province sent out this delegation. They came back with this idea to build this. They must have required a lot of cooperation with the railways.
Oh, inevitably, because the cattle and the other sorts of livestock they were going to bring to the site were brought here by and large by rail. So the three major railways that were operating at that time in Winnipeg, the Canadian Northern, the CN, the Canadian Pacific, the CP, and the Grand Trunk Pacific, all got together. They created essentially a company that would operate the site, and each of those railways brought a railway line to it. Of course, they would then bring carloads of livestock. And in fact, soon after the site began operations, they were bringing in something like 12,000 railway cars each year, bringing livestock.
Now, the site's largely vacant today, but what was there as built on the site as it evolved?
Well, it was vast. The site, I think, is over 200 acres in size. There were a lot of buildings. The main building was a very dramatic three-story building, which was sort of the central administration. But then beyond that, there were large numbers of basically structures to house livestock. Some of them were covered pens. I guess they would use those in the wintertime, perhaps. There were open pens that opened to the air. Literally dozens, possibly hundreds of these buildings just covering this whole area. You see photos of that time and it just buildings as far as the eye can see.
And there were a number of packing plants located there too, right?
Indeed. Well, initially there was one and then two. By the time it was growing at its height, I think there were something like six packing companies operating there.
How many people were employed at its peak?
Oh, I forget. It's something in the order of about 3,000, is my recollection.
Okay.
Quite a large number. Anyway, I just forget the numbers. By the time it closed, though, there were something like 20.
Yeah, I'm amazed that it could have gone from such a huge operation with so many people to being so small. It closed when?
1988 is when it finally shut down. It had been closing basically by little bits for quite a long time. By the 1970s, there was sort of a decentralization starting to occur. Meat packing facilities were starting to open other places, probably places closer to the areas of production. So it simply made sense to bring the animals to a place nearer where they were produced to do the processing and then transport the meat from there. So I think that was sort of the beginning of the end for it. But I say it didn't finally close until August of 1988.
But even as late as 1972, they were processing staggering numbers of cattle and sheep and horses.
Indeed, it was hard to believe. The statistics I came across is that in 1972, for example, in the 1 year, they processed 333,000 head of cattle, 382,000 calves, because they made a distinction between adult animals and youngsters. 67,000 lambs and, in fact, 5,000 horses were killed there.
But the staff at that point was surprisingly small, right?
Yeah, indeed. I say, by the time it closed, there was only something in the order of about 20 or so. So it'd become fairly automated, I suppose, by that time.
So what's on the site now that we can see as the remains of this once dynamic place?
Well, from the ground, you see very little, in fact. If someone driving by on Marion might not see a thing at all, really, other than the one, I guess, distinctive feature, which is the large water tower. There's a 90-foot-high metal water tower. The water would have been used probably for watering the animals, probably firefighting. And it's still standing. In fact, emblazoned on the side of it is the name, Union Stockyards, all rusty. You can kind of see that it's really not in great condition. That's the only thing you can really see conspicuously. If you can get up in the air a little bit, though, you can see that there's still quite a big footprint there. For example, all of the concrete pads for buildings that were there, the floors are still all there. They're cracked, of course. There's vegetation growing through them. So from the air, in fact, you get an impressive view of just how extensive a complex this really was.
Union Stockyards, now completely gone, really pretty much.
Basically
right?
Gone, yes.
Wow. Where are you taking us next week?
Well, I'm going to leave it a bit of a surprise, but I'll just leave you with this. It'll be a breath of fresh air.
Oh, and that's all you're going to tell us?
That's all I'm going to tell you.
Gordon, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Bye. Gordon Goldsboro. He's the chair of the Historic Preservation Committee of the Manitoba Historical Society, talking about the Union Stockyards here in Winnipeg. You must have stories from the Union Stockyards. Would you like to tell us about your experience working there, or as a farmer providing cattle, or as someone who worked in some of the facilities? weekend@cbc.ca, or you can call us, collect on the listener line, 204-788-3102. Our email, weekend@cbc.ca. And Gordon will be back next week with a breath of fresh air, as he puts it, for our series called Abandoned Manitoba.
Time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to CBC Radio 1 from downtown Winnipeg.